They're not as open-minded about such things. TJ sipped his mead, his eyes fixed in the distance. During the war, we had a scout from the Lenape tribe. Called himself, or herself, Mother William.
That's an awful war name, Halfborn complained. Who would tremble in terror before someone called Mother William?
TJ shrugged. I'll admit most of us didn't know what to make of him. His identity seemed to change day to day. He said he had two spirits in his body, one male and one female. But I'm telling you, great scout. Saved us from an ambush during the march through Georgia. I watched Alex eat her dinner, gingerly picking pieces of carrot and potato from her plate. It was hard to believe that a few hours ago those same delicate fingers had taken down a dragon and cut off my head with a wire. Halfborn leaned toward me.
There's no shame in being attracted, Magnus.
I choked on a piece of feast beast. What? No, I wasn't...
Staring? Halfborn grinned.
You know, Frey's priests were very fluid. During the Harvest Festival, they used to wear dresses and do some amazing dances. You're messing with me, I said.
Nope, Halfborn chuckled. One time in Uppsala, I met this lovely...
His story was cut short by the sound of horns echoing through the hall. At the Thane's table, Helgi rose. Since this morning, he'd repaired his suit jacket and clipped his beard, but he was now wearing an oversized war helmet. Probably to hide the damage Alex Fierro had done to his dead buzzard hairdo.
In Harriar, his voice boomed. Tonight, only one fallen warrior has joined us. But I'm told the story of his death is quite impressive.
He scowled at Samira Al-Abbas as if to say, it had better be.
Rise, Alex Fierro, and dazzle us with your glorious deeds.
Chapter 11. What's a guy gotta do to get a standing ovation? Alex didn't look excited about having to dazzle us. She rose, tugging at her sweater vest, then scanned the crowd as if challenging each and every warrior to a duel.
Alex, son of Loki, Helgi began.
Daughter, Alex corrected him. Unless I tell you otherwise, it's daughter. At the end of the Thane's table, Jim Bowie coughed into his mead cup.
What now?
Ernie Pyle muttered something in Bowie's ear. They put their heads together. Pyle brought out his journalist's notepad and a pen. He seemed to be drawing Bowie a diagram. Helgi's face twitched.
As you wish, daughter of Loki.
And don't feel obliged to mention my dad, Alex added. I don't like him very much.
A ripple of nervous laughter went around the room. Next to Alex, Samira clenched her fists as if warming up her strangling muscles. I doubted she was mad at Alex. Sam didn't like Loki either. But if for any reason the Thanes decided Alex wasn't a worthy choice for Valhalla, Sam could get kicked out of the Valkyries and exiled to Midgard. I knew this because that's what had happened when she'd introduced me.
Very well, person who is the child of some parent.
Helgi's voice was as dry as Odin's empty eye socket.
Let us watch your exploits, courtesy of Valkyrie Vision.
These Vikings today and their newfangled technology. Around the trunk of the tree Laerdir, huge holographic screens winked into existence. Footage from Samira's Valkyrie body cam began to play. Sam was an expert at trigonometry, calculus, and aviation. So you'd think she could figure out how to use a camera.
Nope.
She always forgot when to turn it on and off. Half the time her videos came out sideways because she'd clipped the camera on wrong. Sometimes she recorded entire missions where the camera showed nothing but her own nostrils. Tonight, the video quality was good, but Sam had started recording way too early. Timestamp, 7:03 that morning. We were treated to a view of her grandparents' living room, a small but tidy space with a low coffee table and two suede sofas. Over the fireplace hung a framed piece of Arabic calligraphy, a swirling gold ink design on white parchment. Proudly displayed on the mantle underneath were pictures of Sam as a toddler with a toy plane, as a middle schooler on the soccer field, and as a high schooler holding a large trophy. As soon as Sam realized where the video had started, she stifled a yelp, but there was nothing she could do to stop it. The video pan left to a dining area where three older people sat drinking tea from fancy gold-rimmed teacups. One guy I knew, Abdel Fadlan, the owner of Fadlan's Falafel. There was no mistaking his mane of silver hair and that tailored blue business suit. The other two must have been Sam's grandparents, Gide and Bibi. Gide looked like Santa Claus or Ernest Hemingway, barrel-chested and moon-faced with a snowy beard and lots of smile wrinkles, though today he was frowning. He wore a gray suit that had probably fit him 20 years and 20 pounds ago. Bibi wore an elegantly embroidered red and gold dress with a matching hijab. She sat with perfect poise, like royalty, as she poured tea for her guest, Mr. Fadlan.
From the angle of the camera, I guess Samira was sitting on a chair between the two sofas. About 10 feet away, in front of the fireplace, Amir Fadlan paced in agitation, running his hands through his slick, dark hair. He looked as dashing as always in his skinny jeans, white t-shirt, and stylish vest. But his usual easy smile was gone. His expression was anguished, like someone had stomped on his heart.
"Sam, I don't understand," he said. "I love you."
The entire crowd in the feast hall went, "Ooh!"
"Shut up," Samira snapped at them, which only made them laugh.
I could see that it was taking all her willpower not to cry. The video fast-forwarded. I watched as Sam flew to meet me at the Thinking Cup, then got a message on her phone for a possible code 381. She flew from the coffee shop and sped across the park toward Downtown Crossing. She spiraled down and floated over a dark, dead-end alley between two dilapidated theaters. I knew exactly where it was, right around the corner from a homeless shelter. Heroin junkies like to shoot up in that alley, which made it a great place to get beaten, robbed, or killed. At the moment Sam arrived, it was also a great place to get attacked by vicious, glowing wolves. Against the back wall, three large beasts had cornered a grizzled homeless guy. The only thing between him and certain death was a Roach Brothers shopping cart filled with cans for recycling. My dinner congealed in my gut. The wolves brought back too many memories of my mother's murder. Even if they hadn't been the size of full-grown horses, I would have known they weren't regular Midgard wolves. Blue, phosphorescent mist clung to their fur, throwing aquarium-like ripples of light across the brick walls. Their faces were too expressive, with human-like eyes and sneering lips. These were the children of Fenris. They padded back and forth, snarling and sniffing the air, enjoying the scent of fear coming from their prey.
"Back!" the old man croaked, jabbing his grocery cart toward the animals. "I told you, I don't want it! I don't believe in it!"
In the feast hall, the assembled Inheriar muttered with disapproval. I'd heard stories about some modern demigods, sons and daughters of Norse gods or goddesses who refused to accept their destiny. They turned their backs on the weirdness of the Nine Worlds. Instead of fighting when monsters appeared, they ran and hid. Some decided they were legitimately crazy. They took meds. They checked themselves into hospitals. Others became alcoholics or junkies and ended up on the streets. This guy must have been one of them. I could feel the pity and disgust in the feast hall. This old man might have spent his whole life running, but now he was trapped. Rather than come to Valhalla as a hero, he would die a coward's death and go to the cold land of hell, the worst fate any Inheritor could imagine. Then, at the mouth of the alley, a voice yelled, "Hey!" Alex Fierro had arrived. She stood with her feet planted apart, her fists on her waist like Supergirl, if Supergirl had green hair and sported a pink and green sweater vest. Alex must have been passing by. Maybe she heard the old man shouting or the wolves growling. There was no reason she had to get involved. The wolves were so focused on their prey, they never would have noticed her. Yet she charged the beasts, morphing as she moved and launching herself into battle as a German shepherd. Despite the size difference, Alex managed to knock the largest wolf off its feet. She sank her fangs into its neck. The beast writhed and snarled, but Alex jumped away before it could bite back. As the wounded wolf staggered, the other two attacked her. As quick as flowing water, Alex changed back to human form. She lashed out with her wire, using it like a whip. With a single flick, one of the wolves lost its head.
"Ooh," the audience said with appreciation.
Before she could strike again, the other wolf tackled her. The two of them rolled across the alley. Alex changed to a German shepherd again, clawing and biting, but she was out of her weight class.
"Turn into something bigger," I found myself murmuring. But for whatever reason, Alex didn't. I'd always liked dogs, more than I liked most people, and definitely more than wolves.
It was hard to watch as the wolf tore into the German Shepherd, ripping at Alex's snout and throat, matting her fur with blood. Finally, Alex managed to change form, shrinking into a lizard and skittering out from under her attacker. She turned human again a few feet away, her clothes in tatters, her face a horror show of slashes and bite marks. Unfortunately, the first wolf had recovered its wits. It howled in rage, a sound that echoed through the alley and ricocheted off the surrounding buildings. I realized it was the same howl I'd heard from across town while I fought the goat assassin. Together, the two remaining wolves advanced toward Alex, their blue eyes flickering with hatred. Alex fumbled with the sweater tied around her waist. One reason she wore it became evident. It concealed a hunting knife at her belt. She drew the weapon and tossed it toward the homeless guy.
"Help me," she yelled. "Fight!"
The blade skittered across the asphalt. The old man backed away, keeping his shopping cart between himself and the battle. The wolves lunged at Alex. Finally, she tried to change into something larger, maybe a buffalo or a bear, it was hard to tell, but I guess she didn't have enough strength.
she collapsed back into human form as the wolves tackled her and brought her down. She fought ferociously, wrapping her garrote around the neck of one wolf, kicking the other. But she was outmatched and had lost too much blood. She managed to choke the larger wolf. It slumped over, crushing her. The last beast took her by the throat. She wrapped her fingers around its neck, but her eyes were losing focus. Much too late, the old man picked up the knife. He edged toward the last wolf. With a horrified shriek, he drove the blade into its back. The monster fell dead. The old man stepped away from the scene. Three dead wolves, their fur still glowing in faint clouds of neon blue. Alex Fierro, her final breath rattling in her chest, a pool of blood spreading around her like a halo. The old man dropped the knife and ran away sobbing. The camera zoomed in as Samira Al-Abbas ascended toward the fallen warrior. Sam reached out. From the broken body of Alex Fierro, a shimmering golden spirit floated up, already scowling at the unexpected summons. The video went dark. It did not show Alex arguing with Sam, punching her in the eye, or causing chaos when she finally reached Valhalla. Maybe Sam's camera ran out of batteries. Or maybe Sam intentionally ended the video there to make Alex look like more of a hero. The feast hall was quiet, except for the crackle of tiki torches. Then the Inheriar burst into applause. The Thanes rose to their feet. Jim Bowie wiped a tear from his eye. Ernie Pyle blew his nose. Even Helgi, who had looked so angry a few minutes ago, openly wept as he clapped for Alex Fierro. Samira looked around, clearly stunned by the reaction. Alex might as well have been a statue. Her eyes stayed fixed on the dark place where the video screen had been, as if she could make her death rewind by sheer force of will. Once the ovation quieted, Helgi raised his goblet. Alex Fierro, you fought against great odds, with no thought for your own safety, to save a weaker man. You offered this man a weapon, a chance to redeem himself in battle and achieve Valhalla. Such bravery and honor in a child of Loki is truly exceptional. Sam looked like she had some choice words to share with Helgi, but she was interrupted by another round of applause. It's true, Helgi continued, that we have learned not to judge Loki's children too harshly. Recently, Samira Al-Abbas was accused of un-Valkyrie-like behavior, and we forgave her. Here again is proof of our wisdom. More applause. The Thanes nodded and patted each other on the back as if to say, yes, wow, we really are wise and open-minded. We deserve cookies. Not only that, Helgi added, but such heroism from an augur. He grinned at the other Thanes to share his amazement. I don't even know what to say. Truly, Alex Fierro, you have risen above what we would expect from one of your kind. To Alex Fierro, he toasted. To bloody death! Bloody death! The crowd roared. No one else seemed to notice how tightly Alex was clenching her fists, or the way she glared at the Thane's table. My guess was that she hadn't appreciated some of his word choices. Helgi didn't bother calling a Vala, or seer, to read Alex's destiny in the runes like he did when I first arrived in Valhalla. He must have figured the Thanes already knew that Fierro would do great things when we all charged to our deaths at Ragnarok. The Inheriar kicked into full party mode. They laughed and wrestled and called for more mead. Valkyries buzzed around in their grass skirts and leis, filling pitchers as fast as they could. Musicians struck up some Norse dance tunes that sounded like acoustic death metal performed by feral cats. For me, two things dampened the party mood. First, Mallory Keane turned toward me. You still think Alex is a legitimate Inheriar? If Loki wanted to place an agent in Valhalla, he couldn't have arranged a better introduction. The thought made me feel like I was back on Randolph's boat, being tossed around in 15-foot swells. I wanted to give Alex the benefit of the doubt. Sam had told me it was impossible to cheat your way into Valhalla. Then again, since becoming an Inheriar, I ate impossible for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The second thing that happened, I caught a flash of movement somewhere above me. I glanced at the ceiling, expecting to see a high-flying Valkyrie or maybe one of the animals that lived in the Tree of Labrador. Instead, 100 feet up, almost lost in the gloom, a figure in black reclined in the crook of a branch, slow clapping as he watched our celebration. On his head was a steel helmet with the face mask of a wolf. Before I could even say, "Hey, look, there's a goat killer in the tree," I blinked and he was gone. From the spot where he'd been sitting, a single leaf fluttered down and landed in my mead cup. Chapter 12. Samira and Magnus sitting in a tree. TALKING. As the crowd streamed out of the hall, I spotted Samira flying away. Hey,
I shouted, but there was no way she could have heard me over the rowdy in Harriar. I pulled off my pendant and summoned Jack. Fly after Sam, will you? Tell her I need to talk to her.
I can do better than that, Jack said. Hang on.
Whoa, you can carry me?
For a short hop, yeah.
Why didn't you tell me that sooner? I totally mentioned it. Plus, it's in the owner's manual. Jack, you don't have an owner's manual. Just hang on. Of course, once you put me back in pendant form, you'll feel... like I've been carrying myself through the air, I guessed. And I'll pass out or whatever. Fine, let's go. There was nothing graceful about flying Jack air. I did not look like a superhero or a Valkyrie. I looked like a guy dangling from the hilt of a sword as it shot skyward, my butt clenched, my legs swinging wildly. I lost a shoe somewhere over the 20th tier. I nearly fell to my death a couple of times. Otherwise, yeah, great experience. When we got within a few feet of Sam, I yelled, "On your left!" She turned, hovering in midair. "Magnus, what are you... Oh, hey, Jack."
"Sup, Lion Lady. Can we put down somewhere? This guy is heavy."
We landed on the nearest branch. I told Sam about the goat assassin lurking in Lairdor, and she zipped off to alert the Valkyries. About 5 minutes later, she came back, just in time to cut short Jack's rendition of "Hands to Myself."
"That is disturbing," Sam said.
"I know," I said. "Jack cannot sing Selena Gomez." "No, I mean the assassin," Sam said. "He's disappeared. We've got the entire hotel staff on alert, but," she shrugged, "he's nowhere."
"Can I finish my song now?" Jack asked.
"No," Sam and I said. I almost told Jack to go back to pendant form. Then I remembered that if he did, I would probably pass out for 12 hours. Sam settled on the branch next to me. Far below, the last of the dinner crowd was exiting the hall. My friends from floor 19, TJ, Mallory, and Halfborn, surrounded Alex Fierro and guided her along. From here, it was hard to tell if this was a congratulatory, buddy kind of escort or a forced march to make sure she didn't kill anyone. Sam followed my gaze.
"You've got doubts about her, I know. But she deserves to be here, Magnus. The way she died, I'm as sure about her heroism as I am about yours."
Since I'd never been confident about my own heroism, Sam's comment didn't ease my mind.
"How's your eye?"
She touched the bruise.
"It's nothing. Alex just freaked out. It took me a while to understand, but when you take someone's hand and lead them to Valhalla, you get a glimpse into their soul."
"Did that happen when you took me?"
"With you, there wasn't much to see. It's very dark in there."
"Good one," Jack said.
"Is there a rune that would make both of you shut up?" I asked.
"Anyway," Sam continued, "Alex was angry and scared. After I dropped her off, I started to realize why. She's gender fluid. She thought that if she became an Inherii, she'd be stuck in one gender forever. She really hated that idea."
"Ah," I said, which was short for, "I get it, but I don't really get it." I'd been stuck in one gender my whole life. Never bothered me. Now I wondered how that would feel for Alex. The only analogy I could come up with wasn't a very good one. My second grade teacher, Miss Mangler, aka Miss Mangler, had forced me to write with my right hand even though I was left-handed. She'd actually taped my left hand to the desk. My mom had exploded when she found out, but I still remembered the panicky feeling of being restrained, forced to write in such an unnatural way because Miss Mangler had insisted, "This is the normal way, Magnus. Stop complaining, you'll get used to it." Sam let out a sigh. "I admit, I don't have much experience with..."
Jack leaped to attention in my hand. "Argers? Oh, they're great! One time me and Frey..."
"Jack," I said. His runes changed to a subdued magenta.
"Fine. I'll just sit here like an inanimate object."
That actually got a laugh out of Sam. She had uncovered her hair, as she often did in Valhalla. She told me that she considered the hotel her second home, and the Inherriar and Valkyries part of her family, so she didn't feel the need to wear the hijab here. Her dark locks spilled around her shoulders, and her green silk scarf hung around her neck, shimmering as it tried to activate its magical camouflage. This was a little unsettling, since every once in a while, Sam's shoulders and neck seemed to disappear.
"Does Alex Fierro bother you?" I asked. "I mean, her being transgender? Like with you being religious and all?"
Sam arched an eyebrow. "Being religious and all, a lot of things bother me about this place," she gestured around us. "I had to do some soul-searching when I first realized my dad was, you know, Loki. I still don't accept the idea that the Norse gods are gods. They're just powerful beings. Some of them are my annoying relatives. But they are no more than creations of Allah, the only god,
just like you and I are. You remember I'm an atheist, right? She snorted. Sounds like the beginning of a joke, doesn't it? An atheist and a Muslim walk into a pagan afterlife. Anyway, Alex being transgender is the least of my problems. I'm more worried about her connection to our father. Sam traced the lifeline on her palm. Alex changes shape so often. She doesn't realize how dangerous it is to rely on Loki's power. You can't give him any more of a hole than he already has. I frowned. Samira had told me something like this before, how she didn't like the shapeshift because she didn't want to become like her dad. But I didn't understand it. Personally, if I could shapeshift, I'd be turning into a polar bear like every 2 minutes and scaring the saber-mnear out of people. What kind of hold are we talking about? She wouldn't meet my eyes. Forget it. You didn't fly after me to talk about Alex Fierro, did you? True. I described what had happened on the battlefield, the dragon and the way Loki had invaded my head wearing an offensive tuxedo and invited me to a wedding. Then I told her about my dreams, and how apparently this marriage just happened to be Sam's to some bar-owning, walrus-voiced giant named Thrym, who served the worst-smelling pickles in Jotunheim. Some of this Jack hadn't heard yet, either. Despite his promise to remain inanimate, he gasped and cried, "You're kidding me!" at all the appropriate spots, and some of the inappropriate ones. When I was done, Sam stayed quiet. A waft of cold passed between us like a Freon leak from an AC. Down below, the cleaning crew had moved in. Ravens picked up the plates and cups. Bands of wolves ate the leftover food and licked the floor clean. We were all about hygiene here in Valhalla. "I wanted to tell you," Sam said at last. "It all happened so quickly, it just came crashing down on me." She wiped a tear from her cheek. I'd never seen Sam cry. I wanted to console her, give her a hug, pat her hand or something. But Sam didn't do physical contact, even if I was part of her extended Valhalla family. "That's how Loki is messing with your personal life," I guessed. "He came to see your grandparents, Amir?" "He gave them invitations." Sam dug one from her pocket and handed it across. Gold cursive on green cardstock, just like the one Loki had tucked into Uncle Randolph's pocket. "The incomparable Loki and some other people invite you to celebrate with them the marriage of Samira Alabas bint Loki and Thrym, son of Thrym, son of Thrym. When? 5 days hence. Where? We'll get back to you. Why? Because it's better than doomsday. Gifts are welcome. Dancing and wild pagan sacrifices to follow." I looked up. Wild pagan sacrifices? You can imagine how that went over with my grandparents. I studied the invitation again. The when section shimmered. The 5 slowly fading, turning into a 4. The where section also had a holographic sheen, as if it might eventually change to a specific address. "Couldn't you tell your grandparents this was a prank? Not when my father delivered it personally." "Oh." I pictured Loki sitting at the Alabas' dining table, sipping tea from one of their lovely gold cups. I imagined Jeed's Santa Claus face getting redder and redder, Bibi doing her best to keep her regal poise while angry steam spewed from the edges of her hijab. "Loki told them everything," Sam said. "How he met my mom, how I became a Valkyrie, everything. He told them they had no right to arrange a marriage for me because he was my dad and he had already arranged one." Jack quivered in my hand. "On the bright side," he said, "that's a very nice invitation."
"Jack," I said.
"Right, inanimate."
"Please tell me your grandparents were not okay with that," I said. "They don't expect you to marry a giant."
"They don't know what to think." Sam took back the invitation. She stared at it as if hoping it would burst into flames. "They'd had their suspicions about my mother's relationship. Like I told you, my family has been interacting with the Norse gods for generations. The gods have this attraction to my clan."
"Welcome to the club," I muttered.
But Jeed and Bibi had no idea of the extent of it until Loki showed up and sent them reeling. What hurt them most was that I'd kept my life as a Valkyrie from them. Another tear traced the base of her nose. "And Amir." "The video we saw on Valkyrie Vision," I guessed. "He and his father came over this morning and you tried to explain." She nodded, picking at the corner of the invitation. "Mr. Fadhan doesn't understand what's going on. Just that there's a disagreement of some kind. But Amir, we talked again this afternoon and I told him the truth, all of it. And I promised that I would never agree to this crazy marriage with Thrym. But I don't know if Amir can even hear me at this point. He must think I'm out of my mind."
"We'll figure it out," I promised. "There's no way you're going to be forced to marry a giant."
"You don't know Loki like I do, Magnus. He can burn down my whole life. He's already started.
He has ways of... She faltered. The point is, he's decided that he is the only one who can negotiate for Thor's hammer. I can't imagine what he wants out of the deal, but it can't be good. The only way to stop him is to find the hammer first.
Then we'll do that, I said. We know this guy Thrym has it. Let's go get it. Or even better, just tell Thor and make him do it.
Across my knees, Jack hummed and glowed.
It won't be that easy, Signor. Even if you could find Thrym's fortress, he wouldn't be stupid enough to keep Thor's hammer there. He's an earth giant. He could have buried it literally anywhere under the earth.
The White Sparrow, Sam said.
In Provincetown, I said.
You still think that's our best bet? Even with this goat killer stalking us, telling us it's a trap?
Sam stared right through me. She seemed to be watching the horizon, imagining a mushroom cloud rising from the nuke Loki had dropped on her future.
I have to try, Magnus. The White's tomb. First thing in the morning.
I hated this idea. Unfortunately, I didn't have a better one.
Fine.
You contacted Hearth and Blitz?
They're meeting us on Cape Cod.
She rose and crumpled up the wedding invitation. Before I could object that we might need it, she tossed it to the ravens and wolves.
Meet you after breakfast. And bring a coat. It'll be a chilly morning to fly.
Chapter 13. Relax, it's just a little death prophecy. Sure enough, once Jack became a pendant again, I passed out for 12 hours. In the morning, I woke with sore arms and legs, feeling like I'd spent the whole night flapping through the air with an inheri hanging from my ankle. Alex Fierro was conspicuously absent from breakfast, though TJ assured me he'd slipped a note under her door explaining where the lounge was for floor 19. She's probably still asleep, TJ said. She had a big first day.
Unless she's that mosquito right there.
Halfborn pointed to an insect crawling across the salt shaker.
That you, Fierro?
The mosquito said nothing. My friends promised to stay on high alert, ready to do whatever was needed to help stop Loki from holding his shotgun wedding in 5, now 4, days.
We'll also keep an eye on Fierro, Mallory promised, scowling at the mosquito.
I just had time to scarf down a bagel before Sam arrived and led me to the stables above the floor 422 exercise room. Whenever Sam said, "We're going to fly," I couldn't be sure what she meant. Valkyries were perfectly capable of flying on their own. They were strong enough to carry at least one other person, so maybe she intended to put me in a large tote bag and schlep me to Cape Cod. Or she might have meant fly, as in, we're going to tumble off a cliff and plummet to our deaths. We seemed to spend a lot of time doing that. Today, she meant riding a flying horse. I wasn't clear on why Valkyries had flying horses. Probably just because they looked cool. Besides, nobody wanted to ride into battle on a lindworm, flapping and bouncing around like a turkey snake cowboy. Sam saddled a white stallion. She climbed on his back and pulled me up behind her. Then we galloped out the gates of the stable, straight into the skies above Boston. She was right about the cold. That didn't bother me, but the winds were strong, and Sam's hijab kept fluttering into my mouth. Since hijabs represented modesty and piety, I doubted Sam wanted hers to look like I'd been chewing on it. "How much farther?" I asked. She glanced back. The bruise under her eye had faded, but she still seemed distracted and exhausted. I wondered if she'd slept at all.
Not long now, she said. Hang on.
I'd flown with Sam enough times to take that warning seriously. I clenched my knees against the horse's ribcage and wrapped my hands around Sam's waist. As we plunged straight through the clouds, I may have screamed, "Mainfritter!" My butt went weightless in the saddle. FYI, I do not like having a weightless butt. I wondered if Sam flew her airplane like this, and if so, how many flight instructors she had sent into cardiac arrest. We broke through the clouds. In front of us, Cape Cod stretched to the horizon, a parenthesis of green and gold in a blue sea. Directly below, the northern tip of the peninsula made a gentle curlicue around Provincetown Harbor. A few sailboats dotted the bay, but it was too early in the spring for many visitors. Sam leveled us off at about 500 feet and flew us along the coast, racing over dunes and marshes, then following the arc of Commercial Street with its gray shingled cottages and neon-painted gingerbread houses. The shops were mostly shut down, the streets empty.
Just scouting, Sam told me.
Making sure an army of giants isn't hiding behind the Mooncusser tattoo shop?
Or sea trolls, or whites, or my father, or...
Yeah, I get the idea. Finally, she banked us left, heading for a gray stone tower that loomed on a hill at the edge of town. The granite structure rose about 250 feet and had a turreted top that resembled a fairy tale castle. I had a vague memory of seeing the tower during my visit here as a kid, but my mom had been more interested in hiking the dunes and walking the beaches.
What is that place? I asked Sam.
Our destination.
A faint smile tugged at her mouth.
The first time I saw it, I thought it was a minaret for a mosque. It looks sort of like one.
But it's not? She laughed.
No, it's a memorial for the pilgrims. They landed here before they moved to Plymouth. Of course, Muslims have been in America for a long time, too. One of my friends at mosque, she has an ancestor, Yusuf Ben Ali, who served with George Washington during the American Revolution. She stopped herself. Sorry, you didn't want a history lesson. Anyway, we're not here for the tower. We're here for what's underneath.
I was afraid she wasn't talking about the gift shop.
We flew around the monument, scanning the clearing at its base. Just outside the tower's entrance, sitting on the stone retaining wall and swinging their feet like they were bored, were my two favorite people from alien worlds.
Blitz! I yelled. Hearth!
Hearth was deaf, so yelling his name didn't do much good, but Blitz nudged him and pointed us out. They both jumped off the ledge and waved enthusiastically as our horse came in for a landing.
Kid! Blitz jogged toward me.
He could have been mistaken for the ghost of a tropical explorer. From the rim of his pith helmet, a screen of white gauze covered him down to his shoulders. The gauze, I knew, was custom designed to block sunlight, which turns dwarves to stone. He'd also put on leather gloves to protect his hands. Otherwise, he was wearing the same outfit I'd seen in my dream. A walnut three-piece suit with a black bow tie, snappy pointed leather shoes, and a bright orange handkerchief for flair. Just the thing for a day excursion into a tomb of the undead. He tackled me with a hug, almost losing his pith helmet. His cologne smelled like rose petals.
Hammers and anvils, I'm glad to see you.
Hearthstone ran up next, smiling faintly and waving both palms in the ASL gesture for yay. For Hearth, this was the equivalent of ecstatic fanboy screaming. He wore his usual black leather jacket and jeans, with his twister dot scarf wrapped around his neck. His face was as pale as ever, with the perpetually sad eyes and the spiky platinum hair, but he had fleshed out a bit in the past few weeks. He looked healthier, at least by human standards. Maybe they'd been ordering a lot of pizza while they hid out in Mimir's safe house.
You guys, I pulled Hearth into a hug. You look exactly like when I saw you in the bathroom.
In retrospect, that was probably not the line to lead with. I backed up and explained what had been going on. The weird dreams, the weirder reality, Loki in my head in a pickle jar, Mimir's head in a bathtub, etc.
Yeah, Blitzen said. The capo loves to show up in the bathtub. Almost scared me out of my chainmail pajamas one night.
That's an image I did not need, I said. Also, we have to have a talk about communication. You guys just disappeared on me without a word.
Hey, kid, it was his idea.
He signed this for Hearth's benefit, pinky touching the forehead, then pointing at Hearth with two fingers. Idea? His. H for Hearthstone's name sign. Hearthstone grunted in irritation. He signed back. To save you, dummy, tell Magnus. He made an M for my name sign, a fist with three fingers wrapped over his thumb.
Blitzen sighed. The elf is overreacting as usual. He got me all terrified and hustled me out of town. But I've calmed down now. It was just a little death prophecy.
Sam untangled her backpack from the horse's saddlebags. She patted the horse's muzzle and pointed toward the sky, and our white stallion buddy took off for the clouds.
Blitzen, she turned. You understand there's no such thing as a little death prophecy, right?
I'm fine, Blitzen gave us a confident smile. Through the gauze netting, he looked like a slightly happier ghost. A few weeks ago, Hearthstone got back from his one-on-one rune magic class with Odin. He was all excited to read my future, so he cast the runes and, well, they didn't come out so good.
Not so good, Hearthstone stomped his foot. Blitzen, bloodshed, cannot be stopped. Before O-S-T-A-R-A.
Right, Blitzen said. That's what he read in the runes, but...
What's Ostara? I asked.
The first day of spring, Sam said.
Which is in, 4 days.
The same day as your supposed wedding.
Believe me, she said sourly, it wasn't my idea.
So Blitzen is supposed to die before that? My stomach started climbing up my throat.
Bloodshed that cannot be stopped?
Hearthstone nodded emphatically. He shouldn't be here.
I agree, I said. It's too dangerous.
Guys, Blitzen tried for a hearty chuckle. Look, Hearthstone is new at reading the future.
Maybe he misinterpreted. Bloodshed might actually be... Toolshed. A toolshed that cannot be stopped. That would be a good omen.
Hearthstone held out his hands as if to strangle the dwarf, which needed no translation.
Besides, Blitz said, if there's a tomb here, it'll be underground. You need a dwarf.
Hearth launched into a flurry of angry signs, but Samira stepped in.
Blitz is right, she said, signing the message with a hot potato fist bump, both index fingers extended.
She'd gotten good at ASL since meeting Hearthstone, just, you know, in her spare time between gathering souls, making honor roll, and flying jet planes.
This is too important, she said. I wouldn't ask you otherwise. We have to find Thor's hammer before the first of spring, or entire worlds will be destroyed. Or I'll have to marry a giant.
Another way, Hearth signed. Must be one. Don't even know hammer is here.
Buddy! Blitz took the elf's hands, which was kind of sweet, but also kind of rude, because it was the ASL equivalent of putting a gag on someone's mouth. I know you're worried, but it'll be fine.
Blitz turned toward me. Besides, as much as I love this elf, I'm going crazy in that safe house. I'd rather die out here being useful to my friends than keep on watching TV and eating delivery pizza and waiting for Mimir's head to pop up in the bathtub. Also, Hearthstone snores like you wouldn't believe. Hearth yanked his hands back. You're not signing, but I can read lips, remember?
Hearth, Sam said, please.
Sam and Hearth had a staring contest so intense I could feel ice crystals forming in the air. I'd never seen those two so much at odds before, and I did not want to be in the middle. I was tempted to summon Jack and have him sing a Beyonce song just to give them a common enemy. At last, Hearthstone signed, if anything happens to him,
I take responsibility, Sam mouthed.
I could read lips too, Blitzen said. And I can take responsibility for myself. He rubbed his hands together eagerly. Now, let's find the entrance to this barrel, eh? It's been months since I unearthed the malicious undead power. Chapter 14. Cry me a blood river. Wait, actually, don't. Just like the good old days, marching together into the unknown, searching for missing magical weapons and risking painful death, I'd missed my buddies. We walked halfway around the base of the tower before Blitzen said, "Aha!" He knelt and ran his gloved fingertips along a crack in the paving stones. To me, it didn't look any different from the thousands of other cracks in the stone, but Blitzen seemed to like this one. He grinned up at me. Now you see, kid, you never would have found this without a dwarf. You would have walked around forever looking for the entrance to the tomb, and...
That crack is the entrance?
It's the trigger for the entrance, yeah, but we'll still need some magic to get in. Hearth, double-check this for me, will you? Hearth crouched next to him. He nodded like, yep, then traced a rune on the floor with his finger. Immediately, a 10-foot square section of pavement vaporized, revealing a shaft that plunged straight down. Unfortunately, the four of us happened to be on the 10-foot square when it vaporized. We dropped into the darkness with a fair amount of screaming, most of which was mine. Good news. When I landed, I didn't break any bones. Bad news. Hearthstone did. I heard a wet snap, followed by Hearth's grunt, and I knew immediately what had happened. I'm not saying elves are fragile. In some ways, Hearth was the toughest guy I knew. But on occasion, I wanted to wrap him in blankets and slap a Handle with Care sticker on his forehead. Hold on, man, I told him, which was useless since he couldn't see me in the dark. I found his leg and quickly located the break. Hearth gasped and tried to claw the skin off my hands. What's going on? Blitz demanded. Whose elbow is this?
That's me, Sam said. Everyone okay?
Hearth has a broken ankle, I said. I need to fix it. You two keep watch. It's totally dark, Blitz complained.
You're a dwarf, Sam slipped her axe from her belt, a sound I knew well. I thought you thrived underground.
I do, said Blitz. Preferably in a well-lit and tastefully decorated underground. Judging from the echo of our voices, we were in a large stone chamber. There was no light, so I assumed the shaft we'd fallen through had closed above us. In the plus column, nothing had attacked us. Yet. I found Hearth's hand and made sign letters against his palm so he wouldn't panic. Heal you. Be still. Then I put both my hands on his broken ankle. I called on the power of Frey. Warmth blossomed in my chest and spread down my arms. My fingers glowed with a soft golden light, pushing back the darkness. I could feel the bones in Hearthstone's ankle knitting together, the swelling subsiding, his circulation returning to normal. He let out a long sigh and signed, "Thanks." I squeezed his knee. "No problem, man."
"So Magnus," Blitz said, his voice hoarse. "You might want to look around."
One side effect of my healing power was that I temporarily glowed. I don't mean I looked healthy. I mean I actually glowed. In the daytime, it was hardly noticeable, but here, in a dark subterranean chamber, I looked like a human nightlight.
Sadly, that meant I could now see our surroundings. We were in the middle of a dome chamber, like a giant beehive carved from rock. The apex of the ceiling, about 20 feet up, showed no sign of the hatch through which we had fallen. All around the circumference of the walls, in closet-sized niches, stood mummified men in rotted clothing, their leathery fingers clasped around the hilts of corroded swords. I saw no exit from the room.
"Well, this is perfect," I said. "They're going to wake up, aren't they? Those 10 guys..."
12, Sam corrected.
12 guys with big swords, I said.
My hand closed around my runestone pendant. Either Jack was trembling, or I was. I decided it must be Jack.
"They could just be terrifying, inanimate corpses," Blitz said. "Think positive."
Hearthstone snapped his fingers for attention. He pointed to the sarcophagus that stood upright in the center of the room. It's not that I hadn't noticed it. The big iron box was hard to miss. But I've been trying to ignore it, hoping it would go away. The front was carved with ornate Viking images, wolves, serpents, and runic inscriptions swirling around a central picture of a bearded man with a big sword. I had no idea what a coffin like this was doing on Cape Cod. I was pretty sure the pilgrims hadn't brought it over on the Mayflower. Sam motioned for us to stay put. She levitated off the floor and floated around the sarcophagus, her axe ready.
"Inscriptions on the back, too," she reported. "This sarcophagus is old. I don't see any sign that it's been opened recently, but perhaps Thrym hid the hammer inside."
"Here's an idea," Blitzen said. "Let's not check."
I glanced at him.
"That's your expert opinion?"
"Look, kid, this tomb reeks of ancient power. It was built well over 1,000 years ago, long before Viking explorers got to North America."
"How can you tell?"
"The marks on the rock," Blitzen said. "I can tell when a chamber was hewn as easily as I can gauge the age of a shirt by the wear of the threads."
That didn't sound very easy to me. Then again, I didn't have a degree in dwarven fashion design.
"So it's a Viking tomb built before the Vikings got here," I said.
How is that possible?"
"It moved," Hearth signed.
"How could a tomb move?"
Blitzen took off his pith helmet. The gauze netting left a cowlick across his otherwise perfect hair. "Kid, stuff moves in the Nine Worlds all the time. We're connected by the world tree, right? The branches sway. New branches grow. Roots deepen. This place has shifted from wherever it was originally built. Probably because, you know, it's imbued with evil magic."
Sam touched down next to us. "Not a fan of evil magic."
Hearth pointed to the floor in front of the sarcophagus. I hadn't noticed before, but all around the base of the coffin, a faint circle of runes was etched in the stone. Hearth fingerspelled K-E-N-N-I-N-G.
"What's that?" I asked.
Samira edged a little closer to the inscription.
"A Kenning is a Viking nickname."
"You mean like, hey, Kenning, how's it going?"
"No," Sam said in that I am going to hit you with the stupid stick tone.
"It's a way of referring to somebody with a description instead of their name. Like, instead of Blitzen, I might say, Clever of Clothes, or for Hearthstone, Rune Lord."
Hearth nodded. "You may call me Rune Lord." Sam squinted at the inscription on the floor.
"Magnus, could you glow a little closer, please?"
"I'm not your flashlight," but I stepped toward the coffin.
"It says Blood River," Sam announced, "over and over, all the way around."
"You can read Old Norse?" I asked.
"Old Norse is easy. You want difficult? Try learning Arabic."
Blood River. My bagel breakfast sat heavy in my gut. Does this remind anybody of bloodshed that cannot be stopped? I don't like it. Even without his gauze netting, Blitz looked a little gray. "It's probably a coincidence. However, I would like to point out there are no exits from this room. My dwarven senses tell me these walls are solid all the way around. We've walked into a loaded trap. The only way out is to spring it."
"I'm starting to dislike your dwarven senses," I said.
"You and me both, kid." Hearthstone glared at Blitzen. "You wanted to come here. What now? Break Kenning Circle? Open coffin?"
Sam readjusted her hijab. "If there's a white in this tomb, it'll be in that sarcophagus. It's also the most secure place to hide a magical weapon, like a god's hammer."
"I need a second opinion." I pulled off my pendant. Jack sprang to full length in my hand.
"Hey, guys. Ooh, a tomb imbued with evil magic? Cool.
Buddy, can you sense Thor's hammer anywhere around here?"
Jack vibrated with concentration.
"Hard to be sure. There's something powerful in that box.
A weapon? A magical weapon? Can we open it? Please, please, this is exciting.
I resisted the urge to smack him upside the hilt, which would have only hurt me. You ever heard of an Earth giant working with a white? Like, using its tomb as a safe deposit box?
That would be strange, Jack admitted. Usually an Earth giant just buries his stuff in, you know, the Earth. Like, deep in the Earth.
I turned to Sam. So why would Otis send us here? And how is this a good idea? Sam glanced around the chamber like she was trying to decide which of the 12 mummies to hide behind. Look, maybe Otis was wrong. Maybe this was a wild goose chase, but...
But we're here now, Jack said.
Ah, come on, guys, I'll protect you. Besides, I can't stand an unopened present. At least let me shake the coffin to guess what's inside.
Hearthstone made a chopping motion against his palm. Enough already. From the inside pocket of his jacket, he produced a small leather pouch. His collection of runestones. He pulled out one I'd seen before.
That's Daga's, I said.
We use that for opening doors in Valhalla.
Are you sure?
Harsh's expression stopped me. He didn't need sign language to convey how he felt. He regretted this whole situation. He hated putting Blitzen in danger. But we were here now. We'd brought him along because he knew magic. He wanted to get this over with.
Magnus, Sam said, you might want to step back.
I did, positioning myself in front of Blitzen, just in case Blood River sprang out of the coffin samurai style and went directly for the nearest dwarf. Hearth knelt. He touched Dagas to the inscription. Instantly, the Blood River Kenning ignited like a ring of gunpowder. Hearth backed away as the sarcophagus's iron lid blew right off, hurtling past me and slamming into the wall. Before us stood a mummified king in a silver crown and silver armor, with a sheathed sword clasped in his hands.
Wait for it, I muttered.
Naturally, the corpse opened his eyes. Chapter 15. All in favor of slaughtering Magnus? Please say aye. With most zombies, you don't expect conversation. I figured King Mummy would say, "Rawr," or at most, "Brains," and then get down to the business of killing us. I was not ready for, "Thank you, mortals. I am in your debt." He stepped out of his coffin, a little unsteadily since he was an emaciated corpse whose armor probably weighed more than he did a tap dance of glee.
1,000 years in that stupid box, and now I'm free! Ha 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 ha!
Behind him, the inner walls of his coffin were scored with hundreds of marks where he'd been keeping track of years. There was no sign of Thor's hammer, though, which meant the zombie had been locked in there without a decent way to stream Netflix. Jack quivered with excitement.
Will you look at that sword? She's so hot.
I did not know, one, how he could tell the sword was female, or two, how he could tell she was hot. I was not sure I wanted answers to those questions. Sam, Blitz, and Hearth edged away from the zombie. Jack's point floated toward the lady's sword, but I forced him to the floor and leaned on him. I didn't want him to offend Mr. Zombie or his blade by being too forward.
Hi, I told the zombie. I'm Magnus.
You have a lovely golden glow.
Thanks. So how is it that you're speaking English?
Am I?
The king tilted his ghoulish head. Wisps of white clung to his chin, maybe cobwebs or the remnants of a beard. His eyes were green and bright and entirely human.
Perhaps it's magic. Perhaps we are communicating on a spiritual level. Whatever the case, thank you for releasing me. I am Galeer, Prince of the Danes.
Blitzen peeked out from behind me.
Galeer? Is Blood River your nickname?
Galeer's laugh sounded like a maraca filled with wet sand.
No, my dwarven friend. Blood River is a kenning I earned from my blade, the Skolfnung sword.
Clunk, clunk.
Hearth had backed into the coffin lid and fallen over it. He stayed in crabwalk position, his eyes wide with shock.
Ah, Galeer said. I see your elf has heard of my sword.
Jack lurched under my elbow.
Senor? I've heard of her, too. She's like...
Wow, she's famous.
Wait, Sam said. Prince Galeer, is there possibly a hammer around here somewhere? We heard you might have a hammer.
The zombie frowned, which caused fault lines to open on his leathery face.
A hammer? No. Why would I want a hammer when I am the Lord of the Sword?
Sam's eyes dimmed, or maybe that was just my glow starting to fade.
You're sure? I asked. I mean, the Lord of the Sword is great, but you could also be,
I don't know, the slammer of the hammer.
Galeer kept his gaze on Sam. His frown deepened.
One moment. Are you a woman?
Yes, Prince Galeer. My name is Samira Al-Abbas.
We call her the Max with the Axe, I offered.
I will hurt you, Sam hissed at me.
A woman, Galeer tugged at his chin, pulling off some of his cobweb whiskers. That's a shame. I can't unsheathe my sword in the presence of a woman.
Oh, what a bummer, Jack said. I want to meet Scofi.
Hearthstone struggled to his feet. He signed, We should leave, now, not let zombie draw sword. What is your elf doing? Galeer asked. Why does he make those strange gestures?
It's sign language, I said. He doesn't want you to draw your sword. He says we should leave.
But I can't allow that. I must show my gratitude. Also, I need to kill you.
My glow was definitely fading now. When Jack spoke, his runes lit the tomb in ominous red flashes.
Hey, zombie guy? Gratitude is usually more like sending a nice card, and less like, I need to kill you.
Oh, I'm very grateful, Galeer protested. But I'm also a draugr, the chief white of this barrow. You are trespassing, so after I finish thanking you properly, I'll have to consume your flesh and devour your souls. But alas, the Skofnung sword has very clear restrictions. It cannot be drawn in daylight or in the presence of a woman.
Those are stupid rules, Sam said. I mean, those are very sensible rules. So you can't kill us?
No, Galeer allowed. But don't worry, I can still have you killed.
He wrapped the sheath of his sword 3 times against the floor. To absolutely no one's surprise, the 12 mummified warriors stepped out from their niches along the walls. The draugr had zero respect for zombie cliches. They did not shamble. They didn't moan incoherently or act dazed like proper zombies should. They drew their weapons in perfect unison and stood ready for Galeer's order to kill.
This is bad, said Jack, master of the obvious. I'm not sure I can take out this many before they kill you guys. And I don't want to look incompetent in front of that hot lady sword.
Priorities, Jack, I said.
Exactly. I hope you've got a plan that makes me look good.
Sam gave us a new light source. In her free hand, a glowing spear appeared, the field weapon of a Valkyrie. Its harsh white light made the zombies' faces start to steam. Hearthstone hefted his pouch of runestones. Blitzen whipped off his bow tie, which, like his entire line of spring fashion, was lined with ultra-flexible chainmail. He wrapped the tie around his fist, ready to smash some zombie faces. I didn't like our odds, 4 against 13, or 5 if you included Jack as a separate person. I didn't, because that meant I would have to pull my own weight. I wondered if I could invoke the Peace of Frey. Thanks to my dad, a pacifist-type god who didn't allow fighting in his sacred places, I could sometimes disarm everyone in a wide circle around me, blasting their weapons right out of their hands. That was kind of my finishing trick, though. I would look really dumb if I tried it now in this enclosed space and the zombies just picked up their swords again and killed us. Before I could decide what would be most impressive to a hot lady sword, one of the zombies raised his hand.
Do we have a quorum?
Prince Galeer slumped as though one of his vertebrae had disintegrated.
Arvid, he said, we've been locked in this chamber for centuries. Of course we have a quorum. We're all present because we can't leave.
Then I move that we call this meeting to order, said another dead man.
Oh, for the love of Thor, Galeer complained. We're here to massacre these mortals, feed on their flesh, and take their souls. That's obvious. Then we'll have enough strength to break free of our tomb and wreak havoc upon Cape Cod. Do we really need...
I second, called another zombie.
Galeer smacked his own skeletal forehead.
Fine. All in favor?
The 12 other dead guys raised their hands.
Then this massacre, meeting is called to order.
Galeer turned to me, his eyes gleaming with irritation. My apologies, but we vote on everything in this group. It's the tradition of the thing.
What thing?
You know, the thing, Galeer said. From the word Thingvellir, meaning field of the assembly, the Norse voting council. Ah. Sam wavered between her axe hand and her spear hand, as if unsure which to use, or whether that decision would require a new motion. I've heard of the thing. It was a site where ancient Norse met to settle legal disputes and make political decisions. The meetings inspired the idea of parliament.
Yes, Galeer said.
Now, the English Parliament, that wasn't my fault personally, but when the pilgrims came along, he pointed his chin toward the ceiling. Well, by that time, our tomb had been here for centuries. The pilgrims landed, camped out over us for a few weeks. They must have subconsciously felt our presence. I'm afraid we inspired the Mayflower Compact, started all that business about rights and democracy in America, blah, blah, blah.
May I take the minutes? Asked a zombie.
Galeer sighed.
Dagfinn, honestly. Fine, you're secretary. I love being secretary.
Dagfinn stuck his sword back in its sheath. He pulled a notepad and a pen from his belt, though what a Viking corpse was doing with school supplies, I couldn't tell you.
So, wait, Sam said. If you've been stuck in that box, how do you know what was going on outside the tomb?
Galeer rolled his lovely green eyes.
Telepathic powers, duh. Anyway, ever since we inspired the pilgrims, my 12 bodyguards have been insufferably proud of themselves.
We have to do everything by parliamentary rules, or thingamentary rules. Not to worry, though. We'll kill you soon enough. Now, I make a motion. First, another zombie interrupted. Is there any old business?
Galeer made a fist so tight I thought his hand would crumble.
Canute, we are Draugr from the 6th century. For us, everything is old business.
I move that we read the minutes from the last meeting, said Arvid. Do I hear a second? Hearthstone raised two fingers. I didn't blame him. The more time they spent reading the minutes of past massacres, the less time they'd have for killing us in a future one. Dagfinn flipped back in his notebook. The pages turned to dust in his fingers. Actually, I don't have those minutes.
Well then, Galeer said, moving right along.
Wait, Blitzen cried. We need an oral accounting. I want to hear about your pasts, who you are, why you were all buried together, and the names and histories of all your weapons. I'm a dwarf. The heritage of things is important to me, especially if those things are going to kill me. I motion that you tell us everything.
I second the motion, Samira said. All in favor?
Every zombie raised his hand, including Galeer, I guess out of habit, who then looked quite annoyed with himself. Jack shot into the air to make the vote unanimous. Galeer shrugged, causing his armor and bones to creak.
You're making this massacre very difficult, but all right. I will recount our story. Gentlemen, at ease.
The other zombies sheathed their swords. Some sat on the floor. Others leaned against the wall and crossed their arms. Arvin and Canute retrieved bags of yarn and knitting needles from their niches and began to work on mittens.
So I am Galeer, began the prince. Son of Thorkell, a prince among the Danes. And this, he patted his sword, is Skofnung, the most famous blade ever wielded by a Viking.
Present company accepted, Jack murmured. But, oh man, Skofnung is a hot name. I didn't agree with him. I also didn't like the look of terror on Hearthstone's face. Hearth, you know this sword? The elf signed cautiously, as if the air might burn his fingers. First belonged to King H-R-O-L-F. Was forged with souls of his 12 followers, all berserkers.
What is he saying? Galeer demanded. Those hand gestures are very annoying.
I started to translate, but Blitzen interrupted, shrieking so loudly that Arvid and Canute dropped their knitting needles.
That sword? Blitz stared at Hearthstone. The one with the stone? Your house?
This made no sense to me, but Hearth nodded. Now you see, he signed. We should not have come. Sam turned, her spear's light making dust sizzle on the floor.
What do you mean? What stone? And what does it have to do with Thor's hammer?
Excuse me, Galeer said. I believe I was speaking. If you came here looking for Thor's hammer, I'm afraid someone gave you very bad information.
We have to live through this, I told my friends. There's a goat I need to kill.
Ahem, Galeer continued. As I was saying, the Skofnung sword was created by a king named Rolf. His 12 berserkers sacrificed their lives so their souls could instill the blade with power.
Galeer scowled at his own men, two of whom were now playing cards in the corner. Those were the days when a prince could find good bodyguards. At any rate, a man named Eid stole the sword from Rolf's grave. Eid lent it to my father, Thorkell, who sort of forgot to return it. My dad died in a shipwreck, but the sword washed ashore in Iceland. I found it and used it in many glorious massacres. And now, here we are. When I died in battle, the sword was buried with me, along with my 12 berserkers, for protection.
Dagfinn flipped a page in his notebook and jotted, for protection.
Can I add that we expected to go to Valhalla? That we were cursed to stay in this tomb forever because your sword was stolen property, and that we hate our afterlives?
No! Galeer snapped. How many times do you want me to apologize?
Arvid looked up from his half-finished mittens. I move that Galeer apologize a million more times. Do I hear a second?
Stop that, Galeer said. Look, we have guests.
Let's not air our dirty undertunics, eh? Besides, once we kill these mortals and devour their souls, we'll have enough power to break out of this tomb. I can't wait to check out Provincetown. I imagined 13 zombie Vikings marching down Commercial Street, barging into the Wired Puppy coffee shop and demanding espresso drinks at sword point. But enough old business, Galeer said. Can I please introduce a motion to kill these intruders?
I second.
Dagfinn shook his ballpoint pen. I'm out of ink anyway.
No, Blitzen said. We need more discussion. I don't know the names of these other weapons. And those knitting needles, tell me about them.
You're out of order, Galeer said.
I move that we be shown the nearest exit, I said.
Galeer stomped his foot. You're also out of order. I call for a vote.
Dagfinn looked at me apologetically.
It's a thing. You wouldn't understand.
I should have attacked immediately while they were off guard, but that seemed undemocratic.
All in favor? Galeer called.
Aye!
The dead Vikings cried in unison. They got to their feet, put away their cards and various knitting projects, and drew their swords once again.
Chapter 16. Hearthstone unleashes his inner bovine. Jack decided this was an excellent time to give me a training session. Despite being fully capable of fighting on his own, he had the strong belief that I should learn to wield him with my own power. Something about me being worthy and competent or whatever. The thing is, I sucked at swordplay. Also, Jack always decided to train me in the worst possible situations.
No time like the present, he yelled, turning heavy and unhelpful in my grip.
Come on, man!
I ducked the first blade that swung toward my head.
Let's practice later, on mannequins or something.
Dodge left, Jack yelled.
Your other left! Make me proud, senor!
The Skofnung blade is watching!
I was almost tempted to die just to embarrass Jack in front of the lady sword. But since I was outside Valhalla and my death would be permanent, I decided that particular plan might be short-sighted. The zombies crowded in. The cramped quarters were our only advantage. Each draugr was armed with a broadsword, which requires about 5 feet of free space for effective swinging. 12 dead berserkers with broadswords surrounding a tight-knit group of defenders in a small chamber? I don't care how good you are at forming a quorum, you're just not going to be able to massacre those defenders very easily without hacking apart your comrades as well. Our melee turned into an awkward shuffle with a lot of shoving, cursing, and bad zombie breath. Samira thrust her spear under Arvid's jaw. The weapon's light burned away his head like a flame going through toilet paper. Another zombie jabbed at Blitzen's chest, but Blitz's chainmail-lined vest bent the blade. Blitz slammed his bowtie-wrapped fist into the zombie's gut, and much to everyone's disgust, got his hand stuck in the zombie's abdominal cavity.
Gross!
Blitzen proceeded to lurch backward, yanking the zombie along, swinging him like a clumsy dance partner and knocking other draugr out of the way. Hearthstone took the award for most improved in melee combat. He slammed down a runestone. He was immediately encased in golden light. He grew taller. His muscles swelled as though someone were inflating his clothes. His eyes turned bloodshot. His hair splayed with static. He grabbed the nearest zombie and tossed him across the room. Then he picked up another one and literally broke him in half over his knee. As you can guess, the other zombies backed away from the crazy, overinflated elf.
What rune is that?
I accidentally swung Jack through the top of Galeer's sarcophagus, giving it a sunroof. Blitz yanked his hand free from his dance partner, who collapsed into pieces.
Uruts, Blitz said. The rune of the ox.
I silently added an Uruts rune to my Christmas wish list. Meanwhile, Samira cut through her enemies, twirling her spear in one hand like a shiny baton of death. Any zombie who managed to avoid going up in flames, she chopped down with her axe. Jack continued shouting unhelpful advice.
Parry, Magnus! Duck! Defense pattern Omega!
I was pretty sure that wasn't even a thing. The few times I managed to hit a zombie, Jack cut him to pieces, but I doubted the moves were impressive enough to win Jack a date with the lady sword. When it became clear that Galeer was running out of bodyguards, he leaped into battle himself, whacking me with his sheathed sword and yelling,
Bad mortal! Bad mortal!
I tried to fight back, but Jack resisted. Probably he thought it would be unchivalrous to fight a lady, especially one who was stuck in her sheath. Jack was old-fashioned that way. Finally, Galeer was the only draugr left.
His bodyguards lay strewn across the floor in a ghastly collection of arms, legs, weapons, and knitting supplies. Galeer backed toward his sarcophagus, cradling the Skofnung sword against his chest.
Hold on. Point of order. I move that we table all further combat until...
Hearthstone objected to Galeer's motion by rushing the prince and ripping his head off. Galeer's body toppled forward, and our roid-raging elf stomped him flat, kicking and scattering the desiccated remains until there was nothing left but the Skofnung sword. Hearthstone started to kick that, too.
Stop him! Jack yelled.
I grabbed Hearth's arm, which was definitely the bravest thing I'd done that day. He rounded on me, his eyes blazing with fury. He's dead, I signed. You can stop now. Chances were high that I was going to get decapitated again. Then Hearthstone blinked, his bloodshot eyes cleared, his muscles deflated, his hair settled against his scalp. He crumpled, but Blitzen and I were both there to catch him. We got used to Hearthstone's post-magic passouts. Sam stuck her spear into Dagfinn's corpse and left it standing up like a giant glow stick. She paced the tomb, cursing under her breath.
I'm sorry, guys. All that risk, all that effort, and no Mjolnir.
Hey, it's cool, Jack said. We rescued the Skofnung sword from her evil master. She's going to be so grateful. We have to take her with us. Blitzen waved his orange handkerchief in Hearth's face, trying to revive him.
Taking that sword would be a very bad idea.
Why? I asked. And why did Hearth look so freaked out when he heard its name? You said something about a stone? Blitz cradled Hearth's head in his lap like he was trying to protect the elf from our conversation.
Kid, whoever sent us here, it was a trap, all right. But the Draugr were the least dangerous things in this chamber. Somebody wanted us to free that sword.
A familiar voice said,
You're absolutely right.
My heart jackknifed. Standing in front of Galeer's sarcophagus were the two men I least wanted to see in the Nine Worlds. Uncle Randolph and Loki. Behind them, the back panel of the sawed-off coffin had become a shimmering doorway. On the other side lay Randolph's study. Loki's scarred lips twisted into a grin.
Good job finding the bride price, Magnus. The sword is perfect.
Chapter 17. Uncle Randolph gets on my naughty list big time. Sam reacted fastest. She grabbed her spear and lunged toward her father.
No, dear. Loki snapped his fingers.
Instantly, Sam's legs buckled. She collapsed sideways on the floor and lay immobile, her eyes half closed. Her glowing spear rolled across the stones.
Sam!
I lurched toward her, but Uncle Randolph intercepted me. His bulk eclipsed everything. He gripped my shoulders, his breath an overwhelming combination of cloves and rotten fish.
Don't, Magnus, his voice fractured with panic. Don't make it worse.
Worse? I pushed him away. Anger hummed through my system. Jack felt light in my hand, ready to lash out. Seeing Samira unconscious at her father's feet, oh gods, I hoped she was only unconscious, I wanted to blade smack my uncle. I wanted to go full Uruts on Loki's face.
Give Randolph a chance, Annabeth's voice whispered in the back of my mind. He's family.
I hesitated, just enough to notice Uncle Randolph's condition. His gray suit was threadbare and smeared with ashes as though he'd been crawling through a chimney, and his face, across his nose, left cheek, and eyebrow, spread a horrible crater of red and brown scar tissue, a barely healed burn mark in the shape of a hand. I felt like a dwarf had punched through my abdominal cavity. I remembered the mark of Loki that had appeared on Randolph's cheek in the family photograph. I thought about my dream on the battlefield in Valhalla and recalled the searing agony on my own face when Loki had communicated with me, using Randolph as a conduit. Loki had branded my uncle. I fixed my gaze on the god of trickery. He still wore the offensive green tuxedo he'd been modeling in my battlefield vision, with his paisley bow tie at a rakish angle. His eyes gleamed as if he was thinking,
Go on, kill your uncle. This could be amusing.
I decided not to give Loki the pleasure.
You tricked us into coming here, I growled.
Why, if you could just step through a magic doorway in a coffin?
Oh, but we couldn't, Loki said. Not until you opened the way.
Once you did, well, you and Randolph are connected.
Or didn't you notice? He tapped the side of his own face. Blood is a powerful thing. I can always find you through him.
Unless I kill you, I said. Randolph, get out of the way. Loki chuckled.
You heard the boy, Randolph. Step aside.
My uncle looked like he was trying to swallow a horse pill.
Please, Loki, don't.
Wow, Loki raised his eyebrows. It sounds like you're trying to give me an order.
But that can't be right, can it? That would violate our agreement.
The words "our agreement" made Randolph wince. He shuffled aside, his facial muscles twitching around the edges of his new scar. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Blitzen helping Hearthstone to his feet. I silently willed them to back away and stay safe. I didn't want anyone else in Loki's path. Sam still wasn't moving. My heart hammered against my ribs. I took a step forward. "Loki, what did you do to her?" God glanced down at his daughter.
"Who, Samira? She's fine. I just willed her to stop breathing."
"You what?"
Loki waved away my concern. "Not permanently, Magnus. I just like to keep a firm hand on my children. So many parents are lackadaisical these days, don't you think?"
"He controls them," Randolph croaked. Loki shot him an irritated look.
"Remind me how well you did as a father, Randolph. Oh, that's right. Your family is dead, and your only hope of seeing them again is me."
Randolph curled inward, withering. Loki turned back to me. His grin sent paisley patterns of ick crawling up my spine.
"You see, Magnus, my children owe their powers to me. In exchange, they must bend to my will when I require it. It's only fair. As I said, family blood is a strong connection. It's a good thing you listened to me and left Alex in Valhalla. Otherwise, we'd have two of my children unconscious."
He rubbed his hands together.
"Now, would you like to see more? Samira's always so reluctant to shapeshift. Maybe I should force her into the shape of a cat for you. Or a wallaby? She'd make a very cute wallaby."
The paisley ick swirled into my stomach, threatening to erupt. Finally, I understood Samira's reluctance to shapeshift.
"Every time I do it," she once told me, "I feel more of my father's nature trying to take hold of me."
No wonder Sam was afraid Loki could make her go through with the marriage to the giant. No wonder she worried about Alex Fierro, who shapeshifted without a second thought. Did other gods have that kind of control over their children? Could Frey... No, I wouldn't allow myself to think about that.
"Leave her alone," Loki shrugged. "As you wish. I merely needed her out of commission. No doubt Galeer told you the Skofnung's sword cannot be unsheathed in the presence of a woman. Fortunately, comatose women don't count. Randolph, hurry up now. This is the part where you draw the sword."
Uncle Randolph licked his lips.
"Perhaps it would be better if..."
His voice deteriorated into a guttural scream. He doubled over, smoke curling from the scar tissue on his cheek. My face burned in sympathy.
"Stop it!" I yelled.
My uncle gasped. He stood up, steam still rising from the side of his nose. Loki laughed.
"Randy, Randy, Randy. You look ridiculous. Now we've been through this before. You want your family back from Helheim? I require full payment in advance. You bear my mark, you do what I say. It's really not that hard."
He pointed to the Skofnung blade.
"Fetch, boy. And Magnus, if you try to interfere, I can always make Sam's coma permanent. I hope you won't, though. It would be terribly inconvenient with the wedding coming up."
I wanted to slice him down the middle like hell. I mean his daughter, hell, who had two different sides. Then I wanted to glue him back together and slice him in half again. I couldn't believe I'd ever thought Loki was charismatic and silver-tongued. He'd called my uncle Randy. That by itself required the death penalty. But I didn't know the extent of Loki's control over Sam. Could he really make her permanently cataleptic with just a thought? I was also worried, sort of, about what might happen to Randolph. The idiot may have gotten himself into an evil bargain with Loki, but I understood why he'd done it. I remembered his wife, Catherine, on that sinking ship, Aubrey with her toy boat, Emma shrieking as she clutched her runestone inheritance, the symbol of all the dreams she would never grow up to realize. To my left, Hearthstone and Blitzen edged forward. Hearthstone had recovered enough to walk on his own. Blitz held a broadsword he must have retrieved from a zombie. I put out my hand, urging them to stay back. Randolph picked up the Skofnung sword. He drew it slowly from its sheath, a double-edged blade of cold gray iron. Along its central ridge, runes glowed faintly in every shade of blue, from permafrost to vein blood. Jack quivered.
"Oh. Oh, wow."
"Yes, indeed," Loki said. "Now, if I could wield the blade and I couldn't have the fabled Sword of Summer, I would choose the Skofnung sword."
"Dude may be evil," Jack whispered to me, "but he has good taste."
"Unfortunately," Loki continued, "in my present state, I'm not really all here.
Blitzen grunted. First thing he said I agree with. That sword should never be drawn.
Loki rolled his eyes.
Blitzen, son of Freya, you're such a drama dwarf when it comes to magic weapons. I can't wield Skofnung, no, but the chases are descended from the Norse kings of old. They're perfect.
I remembered Randolph telling me something about that, how the Chase family was descended from ancient Swedish royalty, blah blah blah. But I'm sorry, if it qualified us to wield evil swords, I was not going to put that on my resume.
Too dangerous, Hearthstone's signing was listless and weak. His eyes brimmed with fear. Death, the prophecy.
So the blade has a few quirks, said Loki. I like quirks. It can't be used in the presence of women. It can't be drawn in daylight. It can only be used by one of noble lineage.
Loki nudged Randolph's arm. Even this guy qualifies.
Also, once the blade is drawn, it cannot be sheathed again until it has tasted blood.
Jack buzzed with a metallic whimper. That's not fair. That is too attractive.
I know, right? Loki said. And the last little quirk of the sword.
Hearthstone, my friend, would you like to tell them, or should I?
Hearthstone swayed. He grabbed Blitzen's shoulder. I wasn't sure if it was for support, or just to make sure the dwarf was still there.
Blitzen hefted his broadsword, which was almost as tall as he was.
Loki, you won't do this to Hearth. I won't let you.
My dear dwarf, I appreciate you finding the tomb's entrance. And of course, I needed Hearthstone to break the magic seal around that sarcophagus. You each played your part well, but I'm afraid I require just a bit more from you both. You want to see Samira happily married, don't you?
To a giant? Blitzen snorted. No.
But it's for a good cause. The return of what's-his-name's hammer. That means I need a proper bride price, and Thrym has asked for the Skofnung sword. It's a very reasonable exchange. The thing is, the sword isn't complete without the stone. The two are a set.
What do you mean? I asked. What stone?
The Skofnung stone. The whetstone that was made to sharpen the blade. With his thumbs and fingers, Loki made a circle about the size of a dessert plate. About yay big, blue with gray flecks, he winked at Hearthstone. Sound familiar?
Hearthstone looked as if his scarf was choking him.
Hearth, I said. What's he talking about?
My elf friend didn't answer. Uncle Randolph stumbled, now using both hands to hold up the cursed sword. The iron blade turned darker, and wisps of ice vapor twisted from its edges.
It's getting heavier, Randolph gasped. Colder.
Then we should hurry. Loki looked down at the unconscious form of Samira. Randolph, let's feed this hungry sword, shall we?
No way. I raised my own blade. Randolph, I don't want to hurt you, but I will.
My uncle let out a broken sob.
Magnus, you don't understand. You don't know what he's planning.
Randolph, Loki hissed. If you want to see your family again, strike.
Randolph lunged, thrusting the cursed blade. And I completely misjudged his target.
Stupid, Magnus. Unforgivably stupid.
I was only thinking about Sam lying helpless at Loki's feet. I needed to defend her. I wasn't thinking about prophecies or how everything Loki did, even a casual glance at his daughter, was a trick. I stepped to intercept my uncle's strike, but he charged right past me. With a cry of horror, he buried the Skofnung sword in Blitzen's gut.
Chapter 18. I need to learn many, many more cuss words in sign language. I howled with rage. I slashed upward, and the Skofnung sword flew out of Randolph's grip, along with... Ew, you might want to skip this part. A couple of pink things that looked like fingers. Randolph stumbled back, cradling his fist against his chest. The Skofnung sword clanged to the floor.
Oh!
Blitzen's eyes widened. The sword had gone straight through his chainmail vest. Blood seeped between his fingers. He stumbled. Hearthstone caught him and dragged him away from Randolph and Loki. I wheeled around on Loki. I raised Jack's blade again and sliced through the god's smug face. But his form just shimmered like a projection.
He swings, he misses!
Loki shook his head.
Really, Magnus? We both know you can't hurt me. I'm not fully here. Besides, fighting isn't your strong suit. If you need to take out your anger on someone, go ahead and kill Randolph, but do it quickly. We have a lot to talk about, and your dwarf is bleeding out.
I couldn't breathe. I felt like someone was pouring pure hate right down my throat. I wanted to cut down my own uncle. I wanted to pull this tomb apart stone by stone.
Suddenly, I understood Ratatosk, the squirrel who only spoke malice and wanted to destroy the very tree he lived in. It wasn't easy, but I pushed down the anger. Saving Blitz was more important than getting revenge. "Jack," I said, "watch these mane fritters. If they try to hurt Sam or take the Skofnung sword, go into Cuisinart mode."
"You got it."
Jack spoke in a deeper voice than usual, probably to impress the Skofnung sword.
"I'll protect the hot lady blade with my life. Oh, and also Sam."
I ran to Blitzen's side.
"That's it," Loki cheered. "There's the Magnus Chase I know and love. Always thinking of others. Always the healer."
I put my hands on Blitzen's gut, then glanced up at Hearthstone. "You got any runes that might help?" Hearth shook his head. His own Ratatosk-level hatred smoldered in his eyes. I could see how desperately he wanted to do something, anything, but he'd already used 2 runes this morning. Any more would probably kill him. Blitzen coughed. His face turned the color of putty.
I'm good, guys. Just need a minute."
"Hold on, Blitz." Again, I summoned the power of Frey. My hands heated like the coils of an electric blanket, sending warmth into every cell of Blitzen's body. I slowed his circulation. I eased his pain. But the wound itself refused to heal. I felt it fighting me, tearing open tissue and capillaries faster than I could mend them, gnawing at Blitzen with malicious hunger. I remembered Hearthstone's prophecy. Blitzen, bloodshed, cannot be stopped. This was my fault. I should have seen it coming. I should have insisted that Blitz stay in Mimir's safe house eating delivery pizza. I should have listened to that stupid back-bay goat assassin. "You're going to be fine," I said. "Stay with me." Blitzen's eyes were starting to lose focus.
"Got sewing kit in my vest pocket, if that helps."
I wanted to scream. It's a good thing Jack was no longer in my hands, because I would have pulled a full-on Kylo Ren temper tantrum. I rose and faced Loki and Randolph. My expression must have been pretty frightening. Randolph backed all the way into a zombie niche, leaving a trail of blood from his wounded hand. I probably could have healed that for him, but I wasn't even tempted.
"Loki, what do you want?" I demanded.
"How do I help Blitzen?" The god spread his arms.
"I am so glad you asked. Happily, those 2 questions have the same answer."
"The stone," Blitz gasped. "He wants the stone."
"Exactly," Loki agreed. "You see, Magnus, wounds from the Skofnung sword never heal. They just keep bleeding forever. Or until death, whichever comes first. The only way to close that wound is with the Skofnung stone. That's why the 2 are such an important set."
Hearthstone launched into a bout of sign language cursing so impressive it would have made a beautiful piece of performance art. Even if you didn't know ASL, his gestures conveyed his anger better than any amount of yelling.
"Dear me," Loki said. "I haven't been called some of those names since my last flighting with the Aesir."
"I'm sorry you feel that way, my elfish friend, but you're the only one who can get that stone. You know it's the only solution. You'd better run along home."
"Home?" My mind moved at the speed of cold syrup. "You mean Alfheim?"
Blitzen groaned.
"Don't make Hearth go. Not worth it, kid."
I glared at Uncle Randolph, who was making himself at home in his zombie niche. With his ratty suit and scarred face, his eyes glazed from pain and blood loss, Randolph was already halfway to being undead.
"What is Loki after?" I asked him. "What does any of this have to do with Thor's hammer?"
He gave me the same desolate expression he'd worn in my dream, when he'd turned to his family on the storm-tossed yacht and said, "I'll bring us home."
"Magnus, I'm so..."
"Sorry?" Loki supplied. "Yes, you're very sorry, Randolph, we know. But really, Magnus, do you not see the connection? Maybe I need to be clear. Sometimes I forget how slow you mortals can be. A giant has the hammer."
He illustrated each word with exaggerated sign language.
"Giant gives hammer back for Samira. We exchange gifts at wedding. Hammer for Skofnung.
"Stop that," I snarled.
"You understand then?"
Loki shook his hands out.
"Good, because my fingers were getting tired. Now, I can't give half a bride price, can I? Thrym will never accept that. I need the blade and the stone. Fortunately, your friend Hearthstone knows exactly where the stone can be found."
That's why you arranged all this? Why you...
I gestured at Blitz, who lay in an expanding pool of red.
Call it incentive, Loki said. I wasn't sure you'd get me the stone merely for the purpose of Samira's wedding, but you'll do it to save your friend. And, I'll remind you, this is all so I can help you get back what's-his-name stupid hammer. It's a win-win. Unless, you know, your dwarf dies. They are such small, pitiful creatures. Randolph, come along now.
My uncle shuffled toward Loki like a dog expecting a beating. I didn't feel much love for my uncle at the moment, but I also hated the way Loki treated him. I remembered the connection I'd had to Randolph during my dreams, feeling the overwhelming grief that motivated him. Randolph, I said, you don't have to go with him. He glanced at me, and I saw how wrong I was. When he stabbed Blitzen, something inside him had broken. He'd been drawn so far into this evil bargain now, given up so much to get back his dead wife and children, he couldn't imagine any other way. Loki pointed to the Skofnung blade. The sword, Randolph, get the sword. Jack's runes pulsed an angry purple. Try it, compadre, and you'll lose more than a couple of fingers. Randolph hesitated, as people tend to do when they are threatened by talking glowing swords. Loki's smug confidence wavered. His eyes darkened. His scarred lips curled. I saw how badly he wanted that sword. He needed it for something much more important than a wedding gift. I put my foot over the Skofnung blade. Jack's right. This isn't going anywhere. The veins in Loki's neck looked like they might explode. I was afraid he would kill Samira and paint the walls with abstract swaths of dwarf, elf, and inherii. I stared him down anyway. I didn't understand his plan, but I was starting to realize that he needed us alive, at least for now. In the space of a nanosecond, the god regained his composure.
Fine, Magnus, he said breezily. Bring the sword and the stone with you when you bring the bride. 4 days. I'll let you know where. And do get a proper tuxedo. Randolph, come along. Chop, chop.
My uncle winced. Loki laughed.
Oh, sorry.
He wriggled his pinky and ring finger. Too soon? He grabbed Randolph's sleeve. The two men shot backward into the coffin portal like they were being sucked out of a moving jet plane. The sarcophagus imploded behind them. Sam stirred. She sat up abruptly, as though her alarm had gone off. Her hijab slipped over her right eye like a pirate's patch.
What's going on?
I felt too numb to explain. I was kneeling next to Blitzen, doing what I could to keep him stable. My hands glowed with enough Frey power to cause a nuclear meltdown, but it wasn't helping. My friend was slipping away. Harf's eyes brimmed with tears. He sat next to Blitz, his polka dot scarf trailing in blood. Every once in a while, he smacked a V sign against his own forehead. Stupid, stupid. Sam's shadow fell across us.
No! No, no, no! What happened?
Hearthstone flew into another sign language tirade. Told you! Too dangerous! Your fault we...
Buddy!
Blitzen pulled weakly at Hearthstone's hands.
Not Sam's... fault. Not yours. Was... my idea.
Hearthstone shook his head. Stupid Valkyrie. Stupid me, also. Must be a way to heal you. He looked to me, desperate for a miracle. I hated being a healer. Frey's fripperies, I wished I were a warrior. Or a shapeshifter like Alex Fierro. Or a runecaster like Hearthstone. Or even a berserker like Halfborn, charging into battle in my underwear. Having my friends' lives depend on my abilities, watching the light go out of Blitzen's eyes and knowing there was nothing I could do about it. That was unbearable.
Loki wouldn't leave us another choice, I said. We have to find the Skofnung stone.
Hearthstone grunted in frustration. I would do it, for Blitz, but no time. Would take a day at least. He will die. Blitzen tried to say something. No words came out. His head lolled sideways.
No, Sam sobbed. No, he can't die. Where's the stone? I'll go get it myself.
I scanned the tomb, frantic for ideas, my eyes fixed on the only source of light, Samira's spear, lying in dust.
Light. Sunlight.
There was one last miracle I could try, a lame, bottom-shelf miracle, but it was all I had.
We need more time, I said, so we'll make more time.
I wasn't sure Blitzen was still lucid, but I squeezed his shoulder.
We'll bring you back, buddy, I promise.
I stood. I raised my face toward the dome ceiling and imagined the sun overhead. I called on my father, the god of warmth and fertility, the god of living things that broke through the earth to reach the light.
The tomb rumbled. Dust rained down. Directly above me, the dome ceiling cracked like an eggshell and a jagged canyon of sunlight spilled through the darkness, illuminating Blitzen's face. As I watched, one of my best friends in the Nine Worlds turned to solid rock. Chapter 19. Should I be nervous that the pilot is praying? The Provincetown Airport was the most depressing place I'd ever been. To be fair, that might have been because I was in the company of a petrified dwarf, a heartbroken elf, a furious Valkyrie, and a sword that would not shut up. Sam had called an Uber car to get us from the Pilgrim Monument. I wondered if she used Uber as a backup for transporting souls to Valhalla. All the way to the airport, crammed in the backseat of a Ford Focus station wagon, I couldn't stop humming, "Fly to the Valkyries." Next to me, Jack hogged the seatbelt and pestered me with questions. "Can we unsheath Skofnung again, just for a minute? I want to say hi." "Jack, no. She can't be drawn in sunlight or in the presence of women, and if we did unsheath her, she'd have to kill somebody." "Yeah, but except for that, wouldn't it be awesome?" he sighed, his runes lighting up his blade. "She's so fine." "Please go into pendant mode."
"Do you think she liked me? I didn't say anything stupid, did I? Be honest."
I bit back a few scathing remarks. It wasn't Jack's fault we were in this predicament. Still, I was relieved when I finally convinced him to turn into a pendant. I told him he needed his beauty rest in case we unsheathed Skofnung later. When we got to the airport, I helped Hearthstone wrestle our granite dwarf out of the station wagon while Sam went into the terminal. The airport itself wasn't much to look at, just a one-room shack for arrivals and departures, a couple of benches out front, and beyond the security fence, two runways for small planes. Sam hadn't explained why we were here. I guess she was using her pilot-y connections to get us a charter flight back to Boston. Obviously, she couldn't fly all four of us under her own power, and Hearthstone was in no shape to cast any more runes. Hearth had spent his last bit of magical energy to summon bubble wrap and strapping tape, using a rune that looked like a regular X. Maybe it was the ancient Viking symbol for shipping materials. Maybe it was the rune for Alfheim Express. Hearthstone was so angry and miserable, I didn't dare ask him. I just stood outside the terminal, waiting for Sam to come back, while Hearth carefully wrapped up his best friend. We'd come to a sort of truce while waiting for the Uber car. Hearth, Sam, and I all felt like stripped high-voltage wires, supercharged with guilt and resentment, ready to kill anyone who touched us. But we knew that wasn't going to help Blitzen. We hadn't discussed it, but we'd formed a silent agreement not to yell and scream and hit each other until later. Right now, we had a dwarf to heal. Finally, Sam emerged from the terminal. She must have stopped by the restroom because her hands and face were still damp. "The Cessna is on its way," she said. "Your instructor's plane?" She nodded. "I had to beg and plead, but Barry's really nice. He understands it's an emergency." "Does he know about..." I gestured around, weakly implying the Nine Worlds, petrified dwarves, undead warriors, evil gods, and all the other messed up things about our lives. "No," Sam said, "and I'd like to keep it that way. I can't fly airplanes if my instructor thinks I'm delusional." She glanced over at Hearthstone's bubble wrapping project. "No change in Blitzen? He hasn't started crumbling yet?" A slug wriggled down my throat. "Crumbling? Please tell me that's not going to happen." "I hope not, but sometimes..." Sam closed her eyes and took a second to compose herself. "Sometimes after a few days..." As if I needed a reason to feel guiltier. "When we find the Skofnung stone, there is a way to unpetrify Blitz, right?" That seemed like a question I should have asked before turning my friend into a chunk of granite, but hey, I'd been under a lot of pressure. I hope so, Sam said. That made me feel a whole lot better. Hearthstone looked over at us. He signed to Sam in small angry gestures. "Plane, you will drop Magnus, me. You don't come." Sam looked stung, but she held her hand up next to her face, index finger pointing skyward. "Understand." Hearthstone went back to packaging our dwarf. "Give him time," I told Sam. "It isn't your fault." Sam studied the pavement. "I wish I believed that." I wanted to ask about Loki's control over her, to tell her how bad I felt for her, to promise we would find a way to fight her father, but I guess it was too soon to bring up all that. Her shame was still too raw. "What did Hearthstone mean about dropping us?" I asked. "I'll explain when we're in the air." Sam pulled at her phone and checked the time. "It's Zur. We've got about 20 minutes before the plane lands. Magnus, can I borrow you?" I didn't know what Zer meant, but I followed her to a little grassy area in the middle of the circular driveway. Samira rummaged through her backpack. She pulled out a folded blue piece of cloth like an oversized scarf and spread it on the grass. My first thought? We're having a picnic? Then I realized she was aligning the cloth so it pointed southeast. That's a prayer rug? Yeah, she said. It's time for noon prayers. Would you stand watch for me? Wait, what? I felt like she was handing me a newborn baby and asking me to take care of it. In all the weeks I'd known Sam, I'd never seen her pray. I figured she just didn't do it very often. That's what I would have done in her place, as little religious stuff as possible. How can you pray at a time like this? She laughed without humor. The real question is, how can I not pray at a time like this? It won't take long. Just stand guard in case, I don't know, trolls attack or something. Why haven't I ever seen you do this before? Sam shrugged. I pray every day, 5 times as required. Usually I just slip away to somewhere quiet. Though if I'm traveling or in a dangerous situation, sometimes I postpone prayers until I'm sure it's safe. That's permissible. Like when we were in Jotunheim. She nodded. That's a good for instance. Since we're not in danger at the moment, and since you're here, and since it's time, do you mind? No. I mean, yeah, sure, go for it. I'd been in some pretty surreal situations. I'd bellied up to a dwarven bar. I'd run from a giant squirrel through the Tree of the Universe. I'd rappelled down a curtain into a giant's dining room. But guarding Samira al-Abbas while she prayed in an airport parking lot, that was a new one. Sam took off her shoes. She stood very still at the foot of her rug, her hands clasped at her stomach, her eyes half closed. She whispered something under her breath. She momentarily brought her hands to her ears, the same gesture we'd used in ASL for listen carefully. Then she began her prayers. A soft, sing-song chanting of Arabic that sounded like she was reciting a familiar poem or a love song. Sam bowed, straightened, and knelt with her feet tucked under her and pressed her forehead against the cloth. I'm not saying I stared at her. It felt wrong to gawk. But I kept watch from what I hoped was a respectful distance. I have to admit, I was kind of fascinated. Also, maybe a little envious. Even after all that had just happened to her, after being controlled and knocked unconscious by her evil father, Sam seemed momentarily at peace. She was generating her own little bubble of tranquility. I never prayed, because I didn't believe in one all-powerful God, but I wished I'd had Sam's level of faith in something. The prayer didn't take long. Sam folded her rug and stood. Thanks, Magnus. I shrugged, still feeling like an intruder. Any better now? She smirked. It's not magic. Yeah, but we see magic all the time. Isn't it hard, like, believing there's something more powerful out there than all these Norse beings we deal with? Especially if, no offense, the big dude doesn't step in to help out? Sam tucked her prayer mat into her bag. Not stepping in, not interfering, not forcing. To me, that seems more merciful and more divine, don't you think? I nodded. Good point. I hadn't seen Sam crying, but the corners of her eyes were tinged with pink. I wondered if she cried the same way she prayed, privately, stepping away to some quiet place so we didn't notice. She glanced at the sky. Besides, who says Allah doesn't help? She pointed to the gleaming white shape of an airplane making its approach. Let's go meet Barry. Surprise! Not only did we get an airplane and a pilot, we also got Sam's boyfriend. Sam was jogging across the tarmac when the plane's door opened. The first person down the steps was Amir Fadlan, a brown leather jacket over his white Fadlan's Falafel t-shirt, his hair slicked back, and gold-rimmed sunglasses over his eyes so he looked like one of those aviator dudes in a Breitling watch ad. Sam slowed when she saw him, but it was too late for her to hide. She glanced back at me with a panicked expression, then went to meet her betrothed. I missed the first part of their conversation. I was too busy helping Hearthstone lug a stone dwarf to the plane. Sam and Amir stood at the bottom step, trading exasperated hand gestures and pained expressions. When I finally reached them, Amir was pacing back and forth like he was practicing a speech. I shouldn't even be here. I thought you were in danger. I thought it was life and death. He froze in his tracks. Magnus? He stared at me as if I'd just fallen out of the sky, which wasn't fair since I hadn't fallen out of the sky in hours. Hey, man, I said. There's totally a good reason for all this. Like, a really good reason. Like, Samira didn't do
anything that you might be thinking that she did that was wrong, because she didn't do that.
Sam glared at me, not helping.
Amir's gaze drifted to Hearthstone. I recognize you, too. From a couple of months ago at the food court, Sam's so-called math study group. He shook his head in disbelief. So you're the elf Sam was talking about. And Magnus, you're dead. Sam said she took your soul to Valhalla, and the dwarf, he stared at our bubble-wrapped carry-on Blitzen, is a statue?
Temporarily, I said. That wasn't Sam's fault either.
Amir let out one of those crazy laughs you never want to hear, the kind that indicates the brain has developed a few cracks that will not come out with buffing.
I don't even know where to start. Sam, are you okay? Are you in trouble?
Samira's cheeks turned the color of cranberry sauce.
It's complicated. I'm so sorry, Amir. I didn't expect
that he would be here, said a new voice. Darling, he wouldn't take no for an answer. Standing in the plane's doorway was a thin, dark-skinned man, so well-dressed that Blitzen would have wept with joy. Maroon skinny jeans, pastel green shirt, double-breasted vest, and pointy leather boots. The laminated pilot's ID hanging around his neck read, Barry Aljabar.
My dears, said Barry, if we're going to keep to our flight plan, you should come aboard. We just need to refuel and we'll be on our way. And as for you, Samira, he raised an eyebrow. He had the warmest gold eyes I'd ever seen. Forgive me for telling Amir, but when you called, I was worried sick. Amir is a dear friend, and whatever drama is going on between you two, I expect you to fix it. As soon as he heard you were in trouble, he insisted on coming along. So, Barry cupped his hand to his mouth and stage whispered,
we'll just say I'm your chaperone, shall we?
Now all aboard!
Barry whirled and disappeared back inside the plane. Hearthstone followed, lugging Blitzen up the steps behind him. Amir wrung his hands.
Sam, I'm trying to understand, really.
She looked down at her belt, maybe just realizing she was still wearing her battle axe.
I know. I'll do anything for you, Amir said. Just don't stop talking to me, okay? Tell me. No matter how crazy it is, tell me.
She nodded.
You'd better get on board. I need to do my walk-around inspection.
Amir glanced at me once more, as if he was trying to figure out where my death wounds were. Then he climbed the steps. I turned to Sam.
He flew out here for you. Your safety is all he cares about.
I know.
That's good, Sam. I don't deserve it. I wasn't honest with him. I didn't want to infect the one normal part of my life.
The abnormal part of your life is standing right here. Her shoulders slumped.
I'm sorry. I know you're trying to help. I wouldn't change having you in my life, Magnus.
Well, that's good, I said, because there's a whole lot more crazy coming up.
Sam nodded. Speaking of which, you'd better find a seat and buckle in.
Why? Is Barry a bad pilot?
Oh, Barry's an excellent pilot, but he's not flying you.
I am. Straight to Alfheim.
Chapter 20. In case of demonic possession, please follow illuminated signs to the nearest exit.
Barry stood in the aisle to address us, his elbows on the seat backs on either side. His cologne made the plane smell like the Boston Flower Exchange. So, my dears, have you ever flown in a Citation XLS before?
No, I said. I think I would remember.
The cabin wasn't big, but it was all white leather with gold trim, like a BMW with wings. Four passenger seats faced each other to form a sort of conference area. Hearthstone and I sat looking forward. Amir sat across from me, and Petrified Blitzen was strapped in opposite Hearth. Sam was up in the pilot seat, checking dials and flipping switches. I'd thought all planes had doors separating the cockpit from the passenger area, but not the Citation. From where I sat, I could see straight out the front windshield. I was tempted to ask Amir to trade places with me. A view of the restroom would have been less nerve-wracking.
Well, said Barry, as your co-pilot on this flight, it's my job to give you a quick safety briefing. The main exit is here.
He rapped his knuckles on the cabin door through which we'd entered. In case of emergency, if Sam and I aren't able to open it for you, you
should have listened to me, Magnus Chase.
Barry's voice deepened and tripled in volume. Amir, who was sitting right under his elbow, nearly leaped into my lap. In the cockpit, Sam turned around slowly.
Barry?
I warned you!
Barry's new voice crackled with distortion and fluctuated up and down in pitch.
Yet you fell into Loki's trap!
What's wrong with him? Amir asked. That's not Barry.
No, I agreed. My throat was as dry as a zombie berserker's. That's my favorite assassin.
Hearthstone looked even more confused than Amir. He couldn't hear the change in Barry's voice, obviously, but he could tell that the safety briefing had gone off the rails.
Now there is no choice, said Barry not Barry. Once you heal your friend, find me in Jotunheim and I will give you the information you need to defeat Loki's plan.
I studied the co-pilot's face. His gold eyes looked unfocused, but otherwise I couldn't see anything different about him. You're the goat killer, I said. The guy who was watching me from the tree branch at the feast. Amir couldn't stop blinking. Goat killer? Tree branch?
Seek out Heimdall, said the distorted voice. He will point you in my direction. Bring the other, Alex Fierro. She is now your only hope for success.
And that covers everything.